This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
We've all heard the phrase that silence is consent. We've also all heard the phrase, speak now or forever lose your peace, or keep your peace. Well, is silence consent? Can you be just as culpable or blamable when you keep silence as when you speak? And how about the sin of omission? Is that just as bad as the sin of commission? All of that here today on Viewpoint. You might be surprised at how close to home this conversation will become here today on Viewpoint. It's a very important conversation for all of us, because certainly we want to understand God's viewpoint, and God's viewpoint might be just a little different than that of our culture. In fact, it might be a lot different than our culture. And we have a special guest joining us, longtime friend, William Federer, a.k.a. Bill Federer, with whom I have had fellowship now via the airwaves for approximately 30 years. We have had a lot of go back and forth because he has written a lot of books. In fact, the very first one that I remember goes back to 1994. We launched this program on May 7th, 1995. And somewhere in that time between May and the end of 1995, Bill joined us on the program to talk about probably his most famous book, which was America's God and Country, which was a compendium of quotations from our nation's founders and so many other important people in our country. Never had there been a book written like it, and never has there been one since. I have used it so many times, and Bill, I'm so grateful for the tremendous work that you put into that. It had to be a humongous piece of research, and not only research, but then choreographing all of it into such a wonderful book. How'd that go?
Well, it took about 4 years and a very patient wife.
I'll bet.
And I had a friend give us their old 386 computer because they graduated to a 486.
Uh-huh.
And so this is before the days of Windows, before the days of mouses, before the days of Internet. And I went to the library and I checked out thousands of books. I went through all the colonial charters, state constitutions, Federalist Papers, Anti-Federalist Papers, Supreme Court decisions, acts of Congress, presidential addresses. And I excerpted out all the references to God, religion, faith, and arranged it alphabetically by the person. So Abigail Adams at the front and Booker T. Washington is at the back. And the book, by God's grace, sold over 500,000 copies, still selling. And been used on the floor of Congress, had Supreme Court cases cite the book, and it's just become a resource for those that want to speak or write on the God and Country topic and want to have a handy resource for quotes from Jefferson and Lincoln and Franklin and so forth.
Well, certainly I have used it many a time. I have, I think, at least three copies in my library. One is a hard copy, and the other two are paperbacks. And I have quoted it certainly in my book, Renewing the Soul of America. And in a number of other books, I use it frequently in just referencing with regard to this program. And so a great deal of thanks goes to you for the tremendous effort that you put forth. Now, you've written quite a few books. How many now?
It's up to 30.
Oh, my goodness. Are you in a competition for something?
No, it's just I have trouble going to sleep at night, so I just write. But it's fun. I learn. I do the research to teach myself, and then I figure if it's interesting to me, it's probably interesting to somebody else. And so I'll collect it and organize it and come up with PowerPoint presentations on it. Did a book on the history of Islam, another one on the history of socialism, did a biography on, you know, Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver, did one on the history of holidays like Christmas and St. Pat's Day, and one on the Pilgrims.
In other words, most of these books are what you would call information books, right?
Yeah.
Not so much transformation books, but information books.
Right. There's one book called Believe, and it's where I give the gospel from God's point of view. It's like, why did he make us in the first place? He made everything.
Uh-huh.
And basically, we're the only beings that can love him back. So, you know, galaxies can't love, rocks can't love. You look up the word angel in the Bible, appears 289 times. Not one time is the word love used to describe an angel's relationship with God.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, the word angel means messenger. They deliver God's messages. They deliver his judgments. They sang when the stars were created. They rejoice when the sinner converts. They are heavenly witnesses. Jesus says, I'll confess you before the angels. They're mighty beings. They're powerful beings. But the word love is not used in any verse to describe their relationship with God. They're not made in the image of God, and Jesus did not die on the cross for angels.
Isn't that fascinating? Well, you've just delivered a mouthful here for us here today as we launch into the deep. But this latest book is very different. Silence equals consent. And underneath that, the words, the sin of omission. So you say, speak now or forever lose your freedom. Actually, the phrase is forever lose your peace.
Forever speak now or forever hold your peace.
Ever hold your peace. 15, and of course, that 15, comes 49. Right out of the marriage vow, or at least it used to. And so this whole idea of silence being consent certainly is a common phrase, a common cultural phrase. It goes way back into Greek culture. But some say it's not true. It just isn't true. For instance, I went to the Gospel According to AI. Now, if you want to go to Google and you want to ask a question of Google, here's what you're going to get. You're going to get a printout, or you're going to get a list of all kinds of things that it has to say in response to that. But at the top, it's going to say AI overview. In other words, AI is putting it together. Very interesting. That's where we are today. So the question is, what does IA or AI put together concerning this matter of silence being consent? Well, here's the first thing it says. In general, silence does not equal consent. Clear and affirmative communication is necessary to establish consent in most situations, including sexual activity, legal context, and business interactions. But it doesn't say in all situations. And so there are exceptions there. And quite frankly, what I ask myself, Bill, is how is it that historically, we would be much more prone to believe that silence is consent than we are today? There must be a reason. Something's happened in our thinking, in our culture, to kind of remove the culpability or blame of silence. What do you think?
Yeah, so 1549, Book of Common Prayer. If anyone present knows any reason this couple shall not be joined together in holy matrimony, speak now or forever hold your peace. So if you're holding your peace, you're giving consent. It comes from Numbers chapter 30.
Uh-huh.
It says, if a daughter, while she's still living in her father's house, binds herself with a vow, in the day the father hears it, if he's silent, her vow stands. But if he disallows it, she's released from the vow. And so it's called the rule of tacit admission, T-A-C-I-T.
Yeah. We'll and pick up on that after this break. I'm so glad that you chose that particular reference. We'll have to bring it up in just a moment. Bill Federer, our special guest today, friends. Stay tuned.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
We're talking today with Bill Federer concerning his new book, Silence Equals Consent, or The Sin of Omission. This is something that we as Christians need to grapple with. And there's so many avenues, angles in which we need to consider this. And there are so many cultural applications that we have seen over the past, 25 years, that should have grabbed our attention with regard to this very issue. Unfortunately, we don't think this way very much anymore, because we found ourselves in our culture making excuses for why we say or don't say things. And so we don't want to hold anybody responsible for what they say or don't say, because it might come home to roost to us. And that's something we don't want to happen. So it's all about putting up with what happens out there, getting along, and we lose the sense, the moral sense of responsibility for what we say or even what we don't say, don't we, Bill?
Right. Well, Black's Law Dictionary says, and a tacit admission, an admission reasonably inferable from a party's failure to act or speak. And so in criminal law, it says tacit criminal admission, a doctrine of is firmly entrenched in state and federal criminal prosecutions. Courts have assumed that a reasonable juror could find a person more likely to deny an accusation he knows to be false than one he knows to be true. And so it's in debt collection law. Somebody owes you money. You wait 10 years to try to start collecting. The judge will say you're past the statute of limitations. You've been silent too long, no money.
Mm.
It's in real estate law.
Yeah.
It's in real estate law. You save up money, buy a rent house or some retirement income, and a squatter moves in. And if you know about it and you're silent, they get title to your rent house through adverse possession. I talked to a guy who had a farm, and the neighbor was driving across a part of his farm to the road. Well, that's the neighbor's farm sold to a meth dealer. And he's trying to stop, and they go, no, old man, we've been driving this road. He goes down to the courthouse and says, yeah, if they drive on your land for 20 years, they get permanent access to it. He found out it was 19 years. He rapidly files that paperwork and takes away, and the neighbors didn't have access.
Well, you know, 21 years, 21 years has normally been the period for adverse possession under common law. And so I do remember a situation just recently where someone came to the recognition that, wow, my neighbor may have the right of adverse possession if I don't do something about it. So they went in there and got the neighbor to sign a recognition that they had built something on the neighbor's yard, and thereby protected themselves against the operation of the law of adverse possession, which is essentially your silence is consent to their possession. So we have these kinds of situations that we have in the law, and you have very quickly gone for those to deal with them. But the question that I have, framing it a little differently, are you just as culpable or responsible for not responding verbally in a situation as you are for responding verbally? Does the culpability or liability or responsibility go both ways? Does it just depend on the situation, Bill?
Well, U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, Congress puts a bill on the president's desk. Quote, if any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, the same shall be a law in like manner as if he had signed it. All he has to do is be silent for 10 days, and his silence equals his signature. And so if a church member's silence gives consent to wedding vows, it gives consent to other things. And if they're killing babies in the community and the church members are silent, they're giving consent to killing babies.
Whoa!
Leviticus 20, and any Israelite who sacrifices a child to Moloch will be put to death. If any member of the community closes their eyes when that man sacrifices one of his children to Moloch, I myself, the Lord, will set my face against him and his family, will cut them off from their people together. All you have to do is close your eyes when they kill the kid, and you are cut off.
Wow. So you can't put your hand over your eyes and say, look, God, I didn't see that?
Yeah, Acts 22, Paul's talking to the Lord, and when the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by consenting to his death. Paul didn't say a word, yet Paul knew he was guilty for the death of Stephen.
Guilty as sin. Yeah.
Wow. Proverbs 24, rescue those who are unjustly sentenced to death. Don't stand back and let them die. Don't try to disclaim responsibility by saying you didn't know about it. For God who knows all hearts knows yours, and he knows you knew, and he'll repay everyone according to their deeds.
You know, I remember,
told Esther.
I remember a situation back, it must have been 20 years ago at least, in New York. It was a very famous case. where a young woman was attacked there on the street in New York. And there were people who were looking out of their second, third, fourth story windows and watched this take place. And not one single person ever voiced a remonstrance to what took place. It came across in the country as a witness to the moral decay of our country, that nobody but nobody was willing to stand in the gap for somebody who was being killed. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, Leviticus 5, a person sins because he did not speak up, even though he was an eyewitness to a case or knew what happened. Anyone who failed to testify is guilty. So you become an accessory to the crime if you witness a crime and you don't testify against it. You know, Moses and Aaron were called to the door of the tabernacle, mm-hmm. and the Lord said, Moses, thou and Aaron, gather the assembly, speak to the rock, water will come out. Well, they gather the assembly. Moses takes his rod, hits the rock once, hits it twice, water comes out. End of the chapter, it says, Aaron will not enter the land because both of you rebelled against my command at the waters of Meribah.
So Moses, neither Moses nor Aaron were allowed to get into the promised land, even though Aaron wasn't the one that was supposed to speak to the rock. His silence was like approval, and so God held him culpable and responsible, just as Moses.
Right. When Moses hit the rock the first time, it probably took Aaron by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
When Moses lifted up the rod the second time, Aaron knew what was coming, and he didn't protest. He was silent. And in that instant, he was guilty. Moses' was a sin of commission. Aaron's was a sin of omission. Martin Luther King Jr. said, he who accepts evil without protesting it is really cooperating with it. You know, the verse everyone knows is Leviticus 19:18, love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
The verse immediately before it says, confront your neighbor directly so you will not be held guilty for their sin.
Wow.
Right? So they're loving each other and they're confronting each other. One translation says, rebuke your neighbor directly and you will not incur guilt because of him. Right? They're the ones that are sinning, but if you see it and you're silent, you get included in the guilt.
All right. The problem with that, though, is that you might incur consequences. Your neighbor might not be all that friendly to you. Your pastor may not be all that friendly to you if you point out that there's sexual problems going on in his church, right?
Yeah, and your child. I mean, you love your kid, but every now and then you got to correct your kid. Ancient Israel, you love your neighbor, but every now and then you got to correct your neighbor. Why? Because the first 400 years, there was no police. There was no king.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was taught the law. Everybody helped enforce the law.
You know, this has implications for us in every aspect of our country today. Some might say, well, you know, we don't have a theocracy here. We have a democracy, or actually a democratic republic, but we don't have a theocracy. So in that sense, the word of God doesn't have that much authority in the country. How would you respond?
Pre-King Saul, post-King Saul. So pre-King Saul, there was no king, and everybody was taught the law. Everybody helped enforce the law,
mm-hmm.
right? So you didn't just have the blessing of the freedom. You had the responsibility of preserving order in it.
True.
So Proverbs 28, he that rebuketh a man afterward shall find more favor than he that flattereth with the tongue. Better to hear open rebuke than hidden love. You know, Isaiah 1, rebuke the oppressor. I love this one, Proverbs 24. It says, those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. Right? So here we're supposed to be ones that, and even in the New Testament, it says Luke 17:3, if your brother sin, rebuke him. 1 Timothy 5, them that sin, rebuke before all.
But we've gotten to a point, though, where we don't value that kind of moral authority. For instance, the media itself has become complicit for decades now in supporting evil, in affirming evil, in closing their eyes to that which is wrong, that which is evil, because of political power. How do you respond then?
Yeah, well, we have to not care about what other people think and only care about what the Lord thinks.
Ah.
He speaks the truth in love. Now, you can do it nicely. 1 Timothy 5 says, rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father. What does entreat mean? It doesn't mean being silent. It just means you're polite, but you're bringing it up to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they actually have a woke tactic, and it's to guilt trip Christians into being more Christian than Christ.
In other words, they're intimidating you to silence because they think, well, Jesus didn't say anything when he was accused by Pontius Pilate. He opened not his mouth, therefore you should not open your mouth, and that'll make you more Christ-like. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, here they are. They're saying, if you're really Christian, you'll be silent while we teach your kids this trans agenda.
Mm.
Like, I have a question. Would Jesus teach the trans agenda?
I don't think so.
We know what Jesus taught. Matthew 19, he who made them at the beginning made them male and female. So they're saying, if you're really Christian, you'll be silent while we teach your kids something that Jesus would never teach the kids. I mean, if you're really Christian, you won't act like Christ.
Well, Jesus wasn't exactly silent when he approached the Pharisees and the Sadducees there in Matthew chapter 23 and excoriated them with some of the roughest language in the Bible, called them whited sepulchres full of dead bones, dead men's bones, called them hypocrites over and over again. He got their attention. And that's right there in the Bible, an entire chapter of the Bible. So that isn't generally looked upon as the Jesus gentle and mild with a little halo over his head, is it?
Yeah, Jesus did not pet lambs all day long. His first sermon ended with them wanting to push him off a cliff. Another sermon ends with them picking up stones to stone him. Another sermon ends with people saying, this is a difficult thing, and they get up and walk out of church, right? They walk with him no more.
In fact, every single one of his followers except his disciples walked out.
Yeah, he's invited to dinner, and the Pharisee noticed he did not wash his hands. And Jesus says, you Pharisees are more concerned about the outside of the cup and not the inside. You're like a sepulcher, pretty on the outside, inside full of dead men's bones. And the lawyer says, well, Jesus, by saying that, you're insulting us lawyers. He goes, let me tell you about your lawyers. You hit burdens on people too heavy to carry, don't even lift a finger. You hold the keys of knowledge. You don't go in. You don't let anybody else in. And he lays into them. And you wonder if they ever got around to eating dinner. You sort of get the feeling they shoved him out on the street.
Yeah.
I mean, when Jesus asked the disciples, who do men say that I am? Well, some say thou art John the Baptist, some Elijah, some Jeremiah. And, of course, Peter said thou art the Christ. But if you think of it, who was John the Baptist? He stood up to the corrupt King Herod. Who was Elijah? He stood up to the corrupt
King Jezebel. It cost him his head, though.
Jezebel. And who stood up? You know, Jeremiah stood up to King Zedekiah and got thrown in that pit, right? And so, we're social creatures. We want to be accepted. We don't want to be rejected.
Exactly.
And so they want to intimidate you. So Peter, he's with a group around a fire, and he's about to get kicked out of the group. A girl gets in his face and says, you are with Jesus. And you could just picture Peter looking around the fire, and everybody's eyeing him.
Yeah.
And he says, I never met the guy.
So he wasn't silent. He wasn't silent. He was culpable by his open denial of that which he knew to be true.
Yeah, he cared more about what other people thought than what God thought. Jesus says that there were many that were going to believe, but they did not do so publicly because they didn't want to be put out of the synagogue because they loved the praises of men more than the praises of God.
Exactly.
But
okay.
After the resurrection, Peter's called into the Sanhedrin, and they said, we gave you strict orders not to speak in this name. And Peter said, better that we obey God rather than men. What happened to Peter? Now he doesn't care about being kicked out of a group. He was filled with the Holy Spirit. I think maybe one of the evidences of being filled with the Holy Spirit is you can't keep quiet. You got to speak out against injustice.
And it's not a matter of speaking in tongues. It's a matter of speaking the truth to power or to
fire in your bones.
All right. Here's the book, friends. Silence equals consent. Well, the sin of omission. Speak now or forever lose
your
forever lose your
freedom. That's where freedom. I have the subtitle of the book.
That's right. Okay, $20 is going to put it in your hands. It's on our website, friends, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Silence equals consent. It's a fascinating piece of work. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
So good to be with you, my friends, as we talk about this matter of our words and our silence. Does silence equal consent or approval of that which we're experiencing, that we see with our eyes, that we know is present, for instance, in our churches and so on? I'm thinking, Bill, of many different situations where this can apply in our Christian lives. And, of course, one of the implications, one of the main implications that you're making in your book is that if we have any hope of holding on to freedom in our country, we're going to have to speak up. Right?
Yeah, you know, Jeremiah was told by the Lord, tell them everything I tell you to say. Do not be afraid of them, or I will make you look foolish in front of them.
Yeah.
And so this idea that we can't care about their response, in the sense, if God tells us to speak out against injustice, you have to speak out. And so there's too many people that say, well, I'm spiritual, I'm not going to get involved in politics. Yeah, and they by their silence, they're giving consent to all that wicked stuff.
Well, the one thing, the problem with it, though, Bill, is that the use of the word politics isn't necessarily the right word. For instance, what's happened is we've converted moral issues into political issues and then label them as politics so that Christians can opt out of speaking about the moral issues. Pastors have felt the same thing because they said, okay, well, wasn't there a law passed that you can't speak about elections and you can't speak about politics, and therefore pastors shut their mouths from the pulpits of America because they were afraid of losing their 501c3s? Well, the problem was they were focusing on the political aspect when they should have been focusing on the moral and spiritual aspect. There's nothing in the law that says you cannot focus on moral and spiritual issues. I do it every day. I do it right here through this radio program for the past 30 years. I do it in our congregation, not afraid to talk about those things. But you don't have to promote a candidate in order to speak the truth and to speak to these issues. And so I think what's happened is there our culture has deceived us and silenced us in ways that, and we've been willing to be silenced.
Yeah, you know, Exodus 23, neither shall you follow the multitude in doing evil. So there will be a multitude,
yeah,
and they will be doing evil, and you're supposed to be the stick in the mud and not go along with it. You know, Jeremiah 20 says, and then I said, I will not make mention of him nor speak any more in his name, but his word was in mine heart and burning a fire hot within my bones, and I could not stay or keep quiet. You know, you think of love, if you love, if a guy loves a girl, at some point he's going to tell her, he's going to show what's in his heart by his words and his actions.
Yeah.
God knew what was in Abraham's heart. I mean, certainly God knows all of our hearts, but he knew what was in Abraham's heart, but he still wanted to see Abraham express. So he says, take your son Isaac, the one that you really love, take him to the top of Mount Moriah and sacrifice him, right? And so Abraham had to do an action to show that the Lord. I mean, think of a guy watching football, and you say, when was the last time you told your wife you love her? And he's like, I can't remember, but she knows my heart. Okay. When was the last time you
she sure does.
To show, when was the last time you did anything to show your wife you love her? I can't remember, but she knows my heart. It's like, dude, we need to have a little marriage counseling here. She was like, God knows my heart. Yes, he does. And he wants to hear some words out of your mouth and see some actions. And if we're not going to play a good offense, at least play a good defense. They said since COVID, fewer people are sharing their faith. Well, if we're not going to take serious spreading the gospel, at least don't keep your mouth shut when they want to mutilate a little innocent kid.
You know, I think a lot of times we don't speak. We think by not speaking, as you said, well, my wife knows my heart. God knows my heart. I hear that so much, especially with regard to God. Well, God knows my heart. Yes, he does. He knows your heart because of your silence to do his will. And so he knew Abraham's heart, proven by Abraham willing to do what God asked him to do. If Abraham had not done that, his silence, so to speak, his failure to act, would have proven what was in his heart. And therein lies a major part of our problem here in this country, why we don't have spiritual revival after 40 years of begging God for it.
Yeah, you know, every romance novel, every chick flick movie, it builds up to a crisis moment, right? A couple guys are chasing a girl, and she's trying to decide which one really loves him, which one doesn't. So there's this crisis moment, and the one guy calls and says, oh, I know it's the big night, and you have your dress, but I got a business call. I'm going to have to miss it tonight. You'll understand, won't you? And this other guy will crawl across glass just to spend a few minutes with her. And it's like, okay, this crisis moment really reveals what's in these guys' hearts. I think God is putting the world through a crisis moment so that we have to reveal what's in our hearts.
Yeah.
And if you can stay silent when they're, you know, I tell people, some people say, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to wait for the rapture. I have a question. Who do you think you're going to meet when you're raptured? Jesus. Does Jesus love the little children? Oh, yes, Jesus loves the little children. You think he might wonder why you didn't do anything to protect them?
In fact, Jesus himself said, whoever deals with these little kids and doesn't cooperate from God's viewpoint, it's going to be as if a millstone was hung around his head. It's not going to be pretty for those who are silent when the little children are affected.
Yeah, you know, I was in Colorado visiting with State Representative Scott Bottoms, and he was talking about how he talked to local sheriffs, and they told him that there are state legislators involved in sex trafficking of children.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so he introduces a bill for minimum punishment for caught being sex trafficking children. And he says every Democrat voted against it, and it didn't pass because the Democrats have a majority. There was a state senator in California, Sharon Grove, and she introduces a bill making it a felony to purchase a child for sex. And all the Democrats vote against it. And the Democrat state senator, Susan Eggman, rebukes her own party. She says, I'm a social worker. I've worked with women who've been abused as children, and they have to deal with it their whole lives, and you're more concerned about this guy that's going to go out and do it again in 2 days. You know, the Salvation Army started with William and Catherine Booth rescuing children out of sex trafficking in London.
Amazing, huh?
They terrible people. Would
just look at London families. Now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they
silence.
Go to a poor family and give us your daughter. We'll give her an education to get her out of the house and sell her into a brothel. And when Catherine Booth found out about this, she said, I felt as though I must go and walk the streets and besiege the dens where these hellish iniquities are going on. To keep quiet seemed like being a betrayer to humanity. Right? There's something inside of her. She just could not keep quiet. And so I think God is letting the world. So there are those that are doing evil. And those that are silent in the face of evil. I mean, I'm 67, and I've never seen before Satan clubs on elementary school campuses and Satan worshiping Grammys and Satan trans clothes designers for Target and Satan Disney FX having a little demon Satan cartoon and Satan statues in the Iowa State Capitol. It's like, I've never seen this before. It's like God is pulling back the curtain and showing you Satan. And at the same time, people are being bolder for Jesus. And God's like, okay, you're not robots. You're free will beings. But I need you to hurry up and make your decision. And I'm going to make it really clear, God, devil, choose. And some people are going to choose the all others. They're going to want to be accepted. And there's others
exactly.
that are going to be silent.
All right, here's the problem, Bill.
Say, I can't be silent anymore.
All right, I want to delve a little more deeply into one of the greatest problems here. And that is, you're talking about wanting to be accepted, wanting to be loved, wanting to be accepted. Those are the two greatest needs of human beings. But God's greatest need for us is to be accepted by Him, to be loved by Him, and to love Him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So we're in a conundrum now. The culture tells us you've got to be loved and accepted in order to win the world. The result is the world has won us. And that has been the danger of the church growth movement from the 1970s, the seeker-sensitive movement of the 1990s, and now we're in a situation where there's no more ability or willingness to respond. We can't even repent anymore for fear that it might offend somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think God is intentionally pushing the world to this moment. You know, in my book, I spend quite a bit of time going through the 1600s versus the 1700s. Uh-huh. And so the most common form of government in world history is kings.
Right.
And the first instance of a nation without a king was ancient Israel, the first 400 years out of Egypt.
Right.
Millions of people, no king. It's a system that worked because everybody was taught the law by the priests.
Mm-hmm.
And they were personally accountable to God to follow the law. And it worked until the priests went woke and said, there's no more sin anymore. Do whatever you want. Here's Eli, the high priest. His own sons are sleeping with women. And
sounds like America.
And a concubine getting raped to death by a bunch of sodomites. And they all go to Samuel the prophet, and they ask for a king. Now, why is this important? The kings of Europe looked to the Bible for their authority, but they looked to the King Saul and on. And the founders of America, New England, looked to the pre-King Saul part of the Bible. 400 years, right? Millions of people, no king. And so they taught Hebrew at Yale and Harvard. And so King Saul is the divider between America and England. Why is this important? Romans 13, let everyone be subject to the governing authority. So kings have subjects who are subjected to their will.
Right.
But republics have citizens. The word citizen is Greek. It means co-ruler, co-sovereign, mm-hmm. co-king. And so Romans 13, who's the ultimate authority in America? It's we, the people, right? And so subjects submit to the king. But in a republic, the citizens are the king. And the founders got this idea from the first 400 years before King Saul. And so in the 1600s, you literally had churches founding cities. So Providence, Rhode Island is founded by the First Baptist Church in America and Pastor Roger Williams. Hartford, Connecticut is founded by Reverend Thomas Hooker and the First Congregationalist Church in America.
Right.
Everybody's involved in church. Everybody's involved in city government because it's the church founding the city. There's like no non-church members tagging along to be lazy and let them run stuff. And they would have one building in town called the Meeting House.
Right.
That's where the rabbi would teach the law, and that's where they'd do their city business. The word synagogue means meeting house. That's where the rabbi would teach the law. That's where they do their city business. And so it worked until in America the priests went woke, but in a sense they taught it academically at Yale and Harvard. God uh-huh. has a plan for your life, for marriage, and family. And it became dry.
It was sterilized. The truth became sterilized. And now the Holy Spirit is saying, hey, I don't do this sterile thing. I want to breathe some life into my people. I want you to be rivers of living water. And I want you to speak the truth in love. Don't tell me you love and not speak the truth, but speak the truth in love. Let's get with the program and prepare the way of the Lord. We'll be right back, friends.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Bill Federer, our guest today, says the fate of the world hangs in the balance. Now you are key to turning things around. If you're silent regarding evils in your community, you are giving consent. Billy Graham said there is no doubt that nations come to an end when they have ceased to fulfill the function that God meant for them. Well, how can we say we're fulfilling the function that God intends for us if we're silent in the face of wickedness, in the face of evil, even in God's house? Now, get a copy of this book, friends, Silence Equals Consent, The Sin of Omission. $20 will put it in your hands. There is so much in this book. You can see how equipped Bill Federer is to just off the tip of his tongue, deeply rooted in his mind and heart are the scriptures and so on that he can just share with us so rapidly. It's impressive, isn't it? But you're going to be impressed when you read the book, Silence Equals Consent. $20 will put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Again, writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Now, Bill, I want to drive this closer to home. It's very easy to talk about them out there, whoever they is. You know, the liberals, the abortionists, Slick Willie in the White House, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, or whatever, whoever they is. But let's talk about God's warmest audience. God's warmest audience is those who profess his name, the church. But what if, as Jesus said, if the light that is in you be darkness, how great is that darkness? So Jesus was not afraid to say, yes, you're the light of the world, but if you're not being the light of the world, if you're silent when you should be saying something, if you're omitting to say the truth when you should be saying something else, then there's darkness that's coming into the light, and you're not declaring the gospel honestly at all. So let's probe this just a little bit. Let's go to the family, for instance. There are numerous families now across the country, professing Christian families, where a child will come home and say, I am a lesbian, or I am a homosexual, or I am a transgender. Now, from your viewpoint, purporting to explain God's viewpoint, what does that parent do? What should that parent do?
Well, you love them enough to tell them the truth. In the beginning, God made them male and female. There's only two.
Right.
You know, when they castrate these little boys, they're not turning them into a girl. They're turning them into a eunuch.
Yes, that's true.
That I mentioned that the 1600s, where everybody's involved in church and everybody's involved in city government, the word polis means city, Indianapolis, Minneapolis.
Right.
And politics is simply the business of the city. And
exactly,
all there was in the
exactly.
city of Hartford was the Baptist church. All there was in the city or the Congregationalist church. And so the citizens would agree on how the city's going to be run. It was called policy.
Right.
And then how the citizens treated each other was called being polite. And then if they weren't polite, then they had police.
That's a wonderful trajectory there, by the way.
But the disconnect. So after a century, the 1600s, they taught it academically. Some took it the next step and said, God, in his infinite wisdom, already knows who's going to wind up in heaven, so don't even bother preaching the gospel.
Right.
Whoever's supposed to get saved will somehow get saved. And they became less evangelistic, and they were called old lights. And so David Brainerd got expelled from Yale because he said his professor was as spiritual as a chair. And the Yale students got reprimanded because they were caught going into the town of New Haven and breaking windows. No, they were caught preaching the gospel on the street, and they weren't licensed to preach yet, and they weren't wearing a black robe in the formal setting of a church, and it was considered disrespectful. So in the 1700s, you have the new lights. And they're the ones that said it's more than a plan. You have to have an experience with Jesus. And when you do, your life will change. And you won't do worldly things anymore, like bars and brothels and government.
True.
Wait, what was that last thing? Government. Yeah, it's worldly. Well, wait a second. If all the spiritual people withdraw from government, who's left to be involved but the less spiritual?
Well, on the other hand, the goal right here is to delve into God's warmest audience. Not them out there. For instance, about 10, 15 years ago, Christianity Today came out with a cover story how America's Christian colleges had become virtual brothels. Now what do you do? That was an amazing thing for Christianity to do because they don't speak like that. But they did then, and they spoke the truth to a situation that had developed in America's Christian colleges and universities. So what did the presidents of those colleges and universities do? What did the trustees do? Did they respond accordingly? No, in most instances. They tried to cover up. So what does a parent do then when the child comes home and says, you know, I believe I'm a lesbian. I believe I'm a transgender. I believe that I'm a homosexual and so on. And you said, well, the parent speaks the truth in love that there are only two genders and so on. Now what? Now the parent has spoken. Now what?
Well, you know, I wanted to finish this thought that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, they say if you're really Christian, don't get involved in politics. Well, because the government's worldly. Well, why is the government worldly? Because Christians have decided not to be involved in politics, right? We've removed ourselves and created a vacuum, and into that vacuum are sucked all the. And so you have to admit, it's a pretty clever trick the devil's pulled to get Christians who believe the gospel of Christ. Let their children be taught the gospel of Antichrist. What do they teach the kids? There's no God.
Right.
They teach the kids there's no sin. You can do whatever you want. And then by inference, if there's no sin, you know, there's no need for a Savior.
Okay.
They're teaching the gospel of Antichrist. So here these people say, oh, we're spiritual. We don't get involved in politics. We're going to let our kids be taught there's no God. There's no sin. There's no need for a Savior. They're letting the people who believe the gospel are letting the kids be taught.
Okay,
the gospel.
So what does the parent do now? All of that is the background. What does the parent do, the Christian parent who says, this is not right, this is not holy, now what does the parent do with that teenager or young adult child who is coming and bearing this perverse, biblically perverse viewpoint?
Art Club is a documentary of Erin Lee, a mom, and her 14-year-old daughter. School was over, and she saw an advertisement on the bulletin board for Art Club. So she goes to this art club. It's a transgendered indoctrination club. And they tell the kids, don't tell your parents about what we're talking about. In an hour and a half, they brainwash this little girl, and she goes home and tells her mom she's transgendered. And the mom calls the school. Well, guess what? The school has textbooks on how to handle parents, and they report the parent to the Child Protective Services and says this parent's not going to help the child with their transition, and the police show up at the house.
So the parent is legally, under color of law, intimidated to silence, and when they did speak out, now you're the subject of legal retribution.
Yeah, I was in Iowa. They actually have it as law in Iowa where the school can begin to give your child puberty blockers without telling the parents. In California and Colorado, they can actually take the children away from the family and not even tell the parents. The kid doesn't come home from school one day. Where's my kid? We can't tell you. What? And they kidnap the kid, and then they'll do the surgeries. It's horrible. And so after a year and a half of Erin Lee fighting this, her daughter finally comes to her senses. I mean, they take her out of school. They go to a psychologist, and they said, Christian psychologist, we can't talk about that issue because we'll lose our license. And, you know, I mean, they geared it all. And so finally she comes out, and the daughter says, why did they do that to me? They knew that I was going through the puberty, and I was, like, insecure. And they specifically target the kids that are going through this period where they're learning their identity.
I agree with that. And the question still remains, Bill. The question still remains now, what does the Christian parent do? Are they intimidated completely to silence because they're going to receive the retribution of the law or the children's services? That's really what's actually happening. The same is occurring in our churches. Did you know that in the last 9 months, 11 major ministries in this country, in effect around the world, in Dallas, Texas alone, Those pastors were removed from ministry. Why? Because things were discovered that had been hidden within those churches. Nobody spoke up. The elders that knew about it didn't speak up. Are they culpable? What is going on here? Has the devil actually taken over our churches because we have been intimidated to silence?
Well, as far as the practical, Liberty Council, LC.org, Matt Staver, he takes these cases. There's also Kelly Shackelford with the First Liberty Institute.
Right.
Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute. So there are law firms that will come to the aid of the parents and tell them in what state they're in, what they can do and what they can't do. So that's a practical thing. But as far as speaking out, you have to speak out. You have to stand up for the truth. And,
right.
And Aaron Lee did for a year and a half, fought this whole system. And then turn it into a documentary.
And that's why persecution comes. Persecution comes on the heels of speaking the truth in situations where the world and the culture have gone antichrist.
Yeah, and you know, they're adding LGBTQ, and they're wanting to add another letter for adult child attraction.
Pedophilia, in other words.
I mean, it's... You take the Judeo-Christian morals off, and it's going to slide all the way down to the pit. It's going to be Sodom and Gomorrah all over again.
We're there. We're already there.
And so that's why I wrote this book. And so the Puritan idea was you can do two things. You can be involved in church, and you can be involved in government. But the Pietists said, no, you can only be involved in one thing. And if you're really spiritual, you'll withdraw from the worldly government and only be involved in church stuff, which, again, if all the spiritual people withdraw, who's left to be involved but the less spiritual?
Yeah.
It's like you're abandoning it. 4 centuries of that teaching in Germany allowed Hitler to seize power and put Jews on train cars off to their death, and they'd go right past the church, and the church's response was to sing louder.
There you go. Like, in other words, they sang as a form of silence, plugging their ears. We're going to go real quickly here to Eli in the Old Testament. Here he was, the high priest. He was the chief spiritual leader there in Israel, revered, and even the prophet Samuel was raised in his under his tutelage, but he had adult sons that were frolicking with the ladies coming in to the synagogue and so on, and they were stealing, they were defrauding the people, conducting sexual orgies, and Eli refused to correct them. What were the consequences very quickly of God's leader refusing to speak?
Yeah, he had him killed. They lost the Ark of the Covenant. His sons were killed. Daughter-in-law died in childbirth, named the baby Ichabod, which means the glory of the Lord has departed. But yeah, here's Eli. His own sons are sleeping with women in the very tent of meeting. And God was very, very bad about that. Why? Because he did not correct them. So we have to realize that we can't sin by commission and we can't sin by omission.
All right. So what does a parent do? What does a parent do very quickly when their child comes in and the parent says, "Well, they're not a Christian, therefore I don't have a right to speak into their life to bring a Christian value to them"? Quickly, what do you say?
Run for school board. You don't have to have a kid in the public school to run for school board.
All right.
The churches need to get behind them.
All right. Here we go, friends. $20 will put the Silence Equals Consent in your hands. You can see we're trying to really grapple with the issues of our time. It's not just about theory out there. There has to be real practice. Are you involved in the sin of omission when you should be speaking? $20 on our website, saveus.org. Write to us at Save America Ministries. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA and become a partner, friends. We really are confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home from God's eternal perspective. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.